Wow, it's been so, so long, but I can't tell you how good it feels to say this, but welcome back to yet another episode of Millennial Musings, and as always, I'm your host, Anurag Ram Chandran. As all of you know, I haven't shared any episodes since the last few months, and right before I got recording this, I started thinking about what might be the best excuse to just say it out and like let's move on to the episode. But I just didn't want to lie to you about it. The honest truth is that I have been experiencing some kind of creative block. I just haven't felt like wanting to do podcasts. I haven't felt like wanting to edit the podcast. I just didn't want any content out there. And I don't know if it's a combination of, you know, where I'm at in my life or my work or depression or there's so many other variables. But the truth is that I just didn't want to do this. And it hurts me to say it. It hurts me to admit this. But I just hit a block and this didn't seem like fun anymore. And I have no reason as to why. Because I'd ended up recording over 6 to 7 episodes with such wonderful guests over the last year. And I just couldn't move past the recording phase to want to put this content out there in the kind of quality that all of you are used to expecting from me. But the other day, I just woke up and I just had this jolt of energy the first thing in the morning. And I just wanted to get back into it. And I have no reason to explain why this change of thought, this change of attitude. But I just woke up and I knew I wanted to put an episode out there. And that energy led me to kind of browsing all these episodes that I'd recorded with all my incredible guests. And one particular episode definitely stood out to me because it was something close to my heart. And I did it with a very, very dear friend of mine. I hope you accept my apologies. I hope you understand where I was at. And I hope that I can continue to ride this new energy into sharing, first of all these episodes that I've recorded. But also get creative with the ways that I can do these podcasts so that I don't have the kind of experience or burnout that I just had previously. So with all that said and out of the way, I am super excited to get back into it and to share with you today's episode with my dear friend Rohit Bhatnagar. We talk about growing up around the world, about being asked where are you really from, and how being third culture kids have shaped our experiences in more ways than one. But before we jump into the episode, I just want to say a big thank you from the bottom of my heart to all of you that have stuck on, have messaged me consistently asking me about where the podcast is, why the hiatus, if I was okay. It truly means a lot to me. And so I hope we can continue with our mission to put up great episodes, great stories, great experiences, and talk about all these topics that millennials and Gen Zs and even previous generations care about. So without further ado, Millennial Musings is back. And you're listening to our latest episode. This might be a good point for me to start off by sharing like a small poem that I've been carrying with me for the longest time. And Rohit, I know this is coming out of the blue. and so
yeah, I'm excited.
I'm just gonna recite this to you. And maybe, you know, get some of your reactions because this is something that always claws at me sometimes, you know. So it's called Diaspora Blues. And I'm going to butcher the name of the poet. It's Ijeoma Umebinyuo. But the poem is called Diaspora Blues. And basically, this is what it is. So here you are, too foreign for home, too foreign for here, never enough for both. And that's it. Sweet and short and sweet. Maybe not as sweet sometimes.
This is probably too early in this podcast for me to be getting into my feelings this much. But this is, yeah, that hits a bit close to home, man. I mean, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, and for me, like every move especially that I've made, and I've made quite a few moves in my life, this has been one that I carry with me for no other reason than to ground myself, you know, for the fact that sometimes home feels foreign. Sometimes, quote unquote, home feels like I don't know what it is. I feel foreign here, I feel foreign there, but at the same time, I feel at home at certain points in each of these places. but I never feel enough in either of these places, right? Yeah, and I was just wondering what you feel about this, because given that we have now been living in India for a few years since we've graduated and moved, quote unquote, again, back. What does that even mean here? What has been your experience, man? Like, having lived in so many different places and trying to assimilate in a place where we kind of blend in some ways, but in many ways, we stick out as sore thumbs.
It's a loaded question. I think short answer would be that it's been a blessing in a lot of ways. Somebody was asking me this a couple of weeks ago, just in conversation, like, you know, and this was in response to me complaining about this, as I tend to do sometimes given the platform, right. Which was that, you know, like, if you were to do it all over again, or if you were to kind of make any future kids you have go through it, would you have it the same way? And my unequivocal answer is yes, I would. Because I think it's been just a great way to kind of see the world, experience the world, and grow up. But at the same time, pulling the curtain back a little bit, it's often not very easy. And I think it forces you to confront some pretty challenging concepts to wrap your head around at a fairly early age. And it's hard to come through that. I mean, it's hard to come through it if you're like 20, 25, 30, 35. So as like a 5-year-old, a 10-year-old, a 15-year-old, where you're that much less sure of yourself, that much less confident in who you are and what you kind of represent, what you stand for, and where you belong, most importantly, it can really fuck you up. And I know I've struggled with it. And for me, like, the journey from the age of like 8, which is when we left India for the first time, to this point now, where I'm a 26-year-old, recording this podcast with you, it's been like an up and down one, man. It's been just years of grappling with, kind of pushing away, and then finally embracing who I am and where I come from. Even if the answer to those questions isn't maybe as cut and dry as it is for many people around the world, right? And many people that we go to work with every day, that we kind of hang out with as friends, yeah, our family, and you know, whatever it is. I think eventually you reach a point where you stop attaching so much importance to a place or a city or a certain set of experiences as home or where you're from or where you belong, and you start thinking of it more as people, right? The problem is that just as a result of the way we grow up, a lot of times, people aren't a constant. People come, people go, you kind of like move in and out of your lives, each other's lives. A lot of the people you come into contact with throughout your life are going to be people with similar backgrounds. And like, you know, as well as I do, that people from those backgrounds will also kind of like move, like come in and out on their own journeys, right? Like, you may overlap for a few years, but chances are it won't be much longer than that, right? So you'll forge really quick, really deep, intense, meaningful relationships, but you don't really get that kind of quality time together physically, not over social media, not over kind of like messaging, like physically, to, you know, just have that warmth, that comfort, that kind of like home feeling, right? So I think, like, not perfect. As with any experience or any kind of thing, nothing is perfect. But definitely has its upsides, and I wouldn't say downsides, but its challenges. What about you, man? What's your experience been like?
Yeah, so I guess in many ways, it's a question that I've eluded for the longest time. You know, like, whenever a question of where am I really from presents itself, it's almost triggering, and to the extent that I would offer the answer that seemed best fit for the circumstance. And I know you have done the same in many ways, right? So I guess when we started working at Dahlberg, we joined on the same day. When the question is asked, where you're from, you know, I would give the answer that seemed easiest to navigate towards the next question. Yeah. Similarly, in college, when I moved to the US for the very first time, that was the same approach, right? Like, I would kind of judge, hey, would this person understand if I said that I was born and brought up in Dubai? Or should I just give them the answer that they're wanting to hear, that I'm from India? Same thing in China, so on and so forth. But the point being that I guess I used to run away from acknowledging the fact that my lived experience is that of, it's kind of like an amalgamation, you know, it's a mixture of all these different places. I've picked up a lot of things from Dubai. I've picked up a lot of things from the US. I've picked up a bunch of shit from China. And now I've picked up a lot from having lived close to 3 years in India, that it is all a part of who I am. But usually a question such as where you're from is meant to elicit a response that is like, you know, small talk kind of response, right? Hey, where are you from? I'm from XYZ. Boom, done. Let's move on to the next question. But in my case, I feel like that is a very deep question that requires a lot of nuance that needs to be provided. But let me flip that back at you, right? Like just for just a second, because I guess for you, it's, and I don't mean to compare like our experiences as in like, you know, more intense or less intense or similar or whatever, but here
each
you are.
Its own, man.
Yeah, exactly, right? But here you are, 8 years old, having, correct me if I'm wrong, born and brought up in India up until that point.
Yeah.
About to move to your very first location, and that is Hong Kong, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah. And so what is that experience like? You know, you're about to move to Hong Kong, you're 8 years old, really not at a stage to like make sense of who you are, what you are, and what you're meant to be in this world. I don't think I have answers to any of those yet. But yeah, what was that experience, man, having moved to a different location at such an early age?
It was rough, man. I mean, like, I feel like when you, like, see, we talk about kind of that question, where are you from, giving us like major anxiety, just because the answer isn't straightforward. It's not an easy answer, right? It's a layered answer for us.
Right.
But up until the age of 8, it wasn't that complicated for me, right? It was, I am from Delhi, right? I'm from India. And I still would say that. Though people may not be happy about it, which is a different story altogether. But I think the reaction, you know, when we found out was just devastation, right? I mean, like, thinking about it, like, I was an 8-year-old kid dependent on not only my sanctuary, which is my home, right, that we grew up in, but also dependent on my family around me, my extended family, which is also mostly in Delhi. I had a circle of friends in Delhi. Like, it was my comfort zone, right? It was my bubble. So I mean, as an 8-year-old kid with this limited view of the world, obviously it's gonna just completely mess with you, right? And just Absolutely. Blow your world up, which made the transition that much harder when we finally got on that plane and moved to Hong Kong. And I think it would have been like 2003, a long time ago. But I think that how hard that transition really is, I think it becomes a lot more painfully evident as you actually live it. And it's even more painfully evident looking back on it years later, right? Because now at the age of 26, I can kind of look back and I can be like, wow, this thing, which I thought was bad back then, was actually much more layered and probably much worse than I, or on a much different level, right, than I thought it was back then. And a lot of this comes especially in light of what's going on in the world right now, in terms of just prejudice, division, hatred, kind of seemingly everywhere right now, right? So people, you know, you're just that much more acutely aware of identity, you know, the kind of divisions it causes, the kind of complexes it really like creates in people. But yeah, kind of like going back to the transition. Yeah, it was hard, man, because I mean, I think I also grew up in Delhi, where I was in a very, very comfortable majority, or a very comfortable kind of space, right? You talk about socially, economically, religiously, came from like an educated family. So I was you know, I was very privileged, and I didn't really have a reason to feel uncomfortable in any part of my life, right? For any of those reasons. The concept of othered or being an other, or the concept of an other even existing, was not one that was apparent to me, right? How quick things change, right? Because, you know, we moved to Hong Kong. Was this kid, 8 years old, you know, coming out of my school in Delhi, moving into this international school, as, you know, most people do, or a lot of people do, kind of moving into different countries as expats. And I was one of the few Indian kids in that school, or at least in my grade, right? And it became very quickly apparent to me, both internally and because of my interactions with my classmates, but how different I actually was, right? You know, the bullying, man, it was tough, right? It took me a long time to get over it, right? Both in terms of just the trauma then and there, but also just feeling really bad about where I came from and almost repressing that part of who I was, right? Yeah. Now, if that happened to me now, right, I'd be like, you know, like, this guy, like, or this person who's treating me like this is a shithead, like, doesn't deserve my time, right? I don't need this in my life, and I would know and have the confidence to move off.
At that age, when you're so impressionable,
you feel powerless, right? Every time you come to school, people are saying you smell like curry, right? Or saying that you bob your head when you talk, or making like shitty Apu jokes, right? I really believe like the Apu character set us back, has set Indians back like decades in just the international view. Like you just have all these stereotypes and all these perceptions and all these jokes and all these insults thrown at you. And you start to think to yourself like shit, like, is all of this true? Am I really this, you know, dirty, smelly, like kid who, you know, eats with the same hand that he washes his ass with?
Yeah.
Who like can't string together a sentence of English without bobbing his head from side to side.
Right.
Right. And you start, I don't want to say start hating yourself, but
it's a whatever hit on the your closest thing to that man. Is,
right?
Absolutely.
Right. It really eats into your self-worth, right? To the point that, you know, it could even be a positive stereotype, right? Like, oh, like, of course he's doing well in school. Like he's Indian. Right. I would take that to heart and actively try to not do well in school at times at that age.
Yeah, just because it's not really cool to be doing well in school when you're in school, right?
Like, I mean, like, fair enough, right? When you're that age, in any case, like, to do well in school is not the coolest thing in the world. But even then, right, if you have that layered onto the fact that, oh, like, of course he will, right? Like, this is all he does. This is what they do, right?
Right.
And mind you, these are, like, kids my age are saying this, which, I mean, now, obviously, knowing this and knowing what I do, like, 20 years later, you know, 17 years later, whatever it is, I know that's because they heard it somewhere else, right? They, like, people aren't born this way. People hear it from their parents or through society or from a movie or a TV show or a song or whatever it is, right? But yeah, man, like it was tough. And eventually my coping mechanism became to distance myself from my heritage, the identity and the culture I'd grown up with as much as possible.
Yeah.
My response became to not let the jokes beat me down, but to kind of take them in my stride. And when I say take them in my stride, I mean my entire sense of humor became a self-deprecating one. Great. Where the only joke I would tell, the only conversations I'd have would be at the expense of my own culture, my own nationality, my own background, my own people, right?
Yeah.
Like, it'd just be what, basically cheap rehashes of Russell Peters jokes.
Yeah.
With like a Simpsons quote like thrown in like every now and again. And like the more you see that kind of humor being rewarded, like kind of like you see it as the key to you fitting in a bit more. You start doing it more and more, and it kind of like really undermines your sense of self-worth even more.
Yeah,
let me just pause there.
Because I have a very strong reaction to this, right? Like, so in your setting, it's very interesting because you're in an environment where you're clearly the other, be it like in terms of appearance, in terms of maybe even the way you spoke or like whatever, right? in my case, around that same age, it's a very interesting phenomenon because I was born and brought up in Dubai, and Dubai, as you know, has a lot of Indians. And I went to an Indian school in Dubai. But here's the catch on that, though. This is like, I'm around people that look like me. I'm around people that can't make the smelly or Appu jokes. But what people can do, or you know, kids can do, is again invoke the sense of otherness within where you're from in India, which is so crazy to think about.
Yeah.
Because we are all expats in this one country that, you know, despite being born there, you can't get your citizenship or whatever. And that's another topic altogether. But here I am as a Malayali, you know, very like, you know, probably growing up in a very Malayali household, but going to school and being shamed for being a Malayali, for, you know, speaking a certain way or dressing a certain way, or even like just all these stereotypes that you mentioned of Indians that had an effect on you. I had all the stereotypes of, you know, being a Malayali in a very North Indian school,
yeah,
kind of played back to me. So to the extent that I would start, you know, bringing in more Hindi words into my vernacular, I would start, you know, saying, you know, like adding whatever little bits of jibes at other Malayalis in the school, kind of distancing myself from quote unquote the Malayali gang, because obviously, right, like when you're targeted, you tend to coalesce around each other, like all of you who are victims of the targeting. And so I would distance myself completely from those groups, you know, just wanting to hang out, only speak in English. Even if somebody addressed me anything in Malayalam, only speaking in English or replying to them in Hindi, even to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. To the extent that even when my parents would like switch on Malayalam channels at home, I would hate it. I would absolutely hate it. I was like, no, I don't want to watch Malayalam movies. I don't want to do this. I don't want to do that. It all sucks, because why the hell are we these like shitty people? You know, I want to be a North Indian.
You start internalizing it, and to some degree, you start blaming it for all the kind of stress and all the shit you take in your life at school, like after school, whatever it is, right? On the bus to and from school, like
And the weird thing was, like, I was blaming my name for being such a giveaway. You know, like my last name with the AN at the end, Ramchandran. Like, it's such a giveaway that I'm from South India, right? And it was like, why? So I started going back, and here's the, like, this is crazy. This is going to sound really crazy. I started going by Anurag Ram in school, not Anurag Ramchandran. Mm-hmm. Just because, you know, I was like, well, I do have, like, a break in my last name. Might as well use it to my advantage to seem like I'm not from Kerala. And that shit fucks with you, man, when you're at such a young age.
Yeah, it really does, man. I mean, what's there to say, man? It's hard. And I think you don't really know why it's happening to you, right? You feel like it's your fault, right?
Yeah.
How are you supposed to process it, right? I mean, you've grown up, you know, like we've both kind of said, you grow up kind of in a world where you are the majority, where there's nothing wrong and there isn't anything wrong with being from a certain part of the world or a certain culture or certain heritage, because, you know, all cultures are beautiful in their own way, right? There's something beautiful about them. They're unique.
Yeah.
You know, you go and you're subjected, and you kind of like go through all these experiences, all these kind of like throwaway comments, and you just internalize that, you know, it's my fault, right? When I remember my first experience with racism, and this, you know, it was fairly innocuous, but it's something that has stuck with me to this day, years later, 15 years later, no more, but it was fourth grade, so nine, so 17 years later. I was headed down for lunch at school one day. You know me, you know, like I'm inherently like a pretty kind of, not super outgoing, but like I'm an outgoing enough person. So I just kind of ran into this classmate of mine on the stairs, and I was chatting him up, or trying to at least, and this guy turns around and looks at me and he says that, I don't want to talk to you. And I was like, why not? And I was like, he's like, it's not you. It's just that Indian people are dirty and I don't like them. And I was like, I was stunned, right? Because I didn't know how to process it. I didn't know what it meant. I didn't know why he said it. But what I do know is that I went home that day and I cried like a baby.
Yeah.
Because I just couldn't understand it.
Yeah.
And
what's
you know,
your
my parents,
fault, right?
Yeah, exactly. My parents were always trying to console me. They were like, you know, he doesn't know what he's talking about. You know, somebody at home probably told him this and he probably repeated it to you. Don't worry about it. Like, you just keep doing your own thing. You keep, you know, you have friends who will not say this kind of stuff to you. You stay with them. Right. But it's always stuck with me. And, you know, similar kind of remarks would come up like in my first 2 or 3 years in Hong Kong till, again, I figured out how to take it into my stride and kind of use self-deprecation as a coping mechanism.
Yeah.
Fast forward, of course, several years, 7, 8 years when we left Hong Kong.
Mm.
You know, I left Hong Kong as a 15-year-old, so a little bit more acutely aware of, you know, how, I guess, fucked up all this stuff is, or right. Fucked up everything was. And
where to did you move?
Moved to some. This is a funny story, right? So, my family moved to Ireland, actually. So my
Got
dad's
it.
Worked in Sudan quite a bit, so we moved to Ireland, and not Dublin, right? Which is like a big city, a small town or smaller town. Irish people will say that it's actually a fairly big town in the Irish context. Cork, which has 200,000 people in it.
Jeez.
And out of 200,000 people, I think we were probably the only Indian people.
Wow.
Because every time we used to walk, obviously I'm exaggerating because if my life has taught me everything, it's that, you know, Indian people are everywhere.
Well, you were there, so I guess
yeah, exactly.
Indian people
I mean,
were everywhere.
Yeah, so we'd walk down the street and like imagine walking through like Main Street. I don't even know what the street was called. Like imagine like the main thoroughfare in a city or in a town, and having everybody like stop what they were doing and look at you. Everybody, because not because they had hatred in their heart or anything, but just because you are that much of the other.
Mm.
So that's just a funny story. I didn't really see it as racist or anything. Just kind of people
yeah.
who
just
didn't
being
know
the
language.
Other. Right.
The two aren't the same, right? Just kind of people who didn't know, which I don't hold against anybody. Then, you know, luckily I was kind of able to go to boarding school after that, where, you know, I found friends, who had kind of experienced similar tensions in life growing up, a lot of whom had actually kind of grown up in the Gulf, in Dubai and Saudi and whatnot.
Yeah.
But that, I think, was the first time where I was really encouraged and had the support of friends who were like, you know, like, you just own it, dude. Like, I mean, fine, like, will we crack jokes at your expense? Yes. But so will you crack jokes at our expense, right? And it just becomes a much more egalitarian thing. It's just kind of riveting, right? Then it's not like internalizing it as, you know, I've done something wrong. So I think once you kind
and
of
this
get to
boarding point, school was in London, right?
Yeah, just outside London. Yeah. I think once you reach a point where, you know, you have somebody tell you that, you know, just own who you are. Because sometimes you need to hear it. Like, I mean, like it's all well and good to kind of grow organically and figure shit out for yourself, but sometimes you need to hear it.
Yeah, yeah.
You can start that kind of process of kind of healing and kind of, you know, loving yourself a bit more because it takes a lot of self-esteem out of you, right?
Yeah.
And I'm just thinking, I'm reminded of an article that you shared with me a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
I think it was a New York Times article. And it was about this whole concept of third culture kids. And somewhere in that article, it said that, you know, that first 7 years of life, which is like kind of like a fuzzy number, is when that entire sense of identity really sets itself up for the future.
Yeah.
And if that kind of gets disrupted in any way, it destroys your self-esteem, number one. More importantly, it kind of just sets you back because you not only lose that self-esteem, but you lose kind of a number of years to actually building it back up before you can kind of get up and move from that same point, right? And I think that that's yeah. what that period of, say, 15 to 18, 19 was for me, where I was just kind of picking up the pieces of just losing faith with who I was and where I came from.
Wow.
I don't know. Did you find it was similar for you or?
Yeah, no, in many ways I resonate with this, Rohit, but like, I guess my big, you know, kind of journeys of shifting and moving happened quite a bit after a lot of this, you know, struggles with identity had been internalized. But let me tell you a quick story of like when I moved to the US, right? And this is like right when we're 18 for college. I made the very weird choice of moving to Missouri, as you know. And and it's an interesting choice for many different reasons, right? One, it is I was born and brought up in the heart of Dubai. Like, you know, Dubai is as and by then Dubai had gotten to the point of being this like mega city, and I'd seen that journey and I'd grown up in that journey, and so I'm a city kid out and out. And so going into like the middle of nowhere in the United States, this beautiful, you know, beautiful town called Columbia, it was like big culture shock, first of all. But then you very soon realize that like your sense of identity that you've developed over 18 years doesn't really fly over there in many ways, right?
Yeah, so true.
So a couple of things, and I guess you would resonate with this as well. When Americans ask you where you're from, they, in general, at least in my experience, they mean where were you born?
Yeah.
But if you give them an answer that doesn't seem like the right answer, they want to know where you're really from.
Where you're really from, yeah.
And that is, like, I'm tired of hearing it, right? So it would be like, okay, where are you from? And having read my name and, you know, kind of made the assumption in their head that I'm from India when I say UAE or Dubai, they're like, oh, okay, you're born.
But where are you really from?
Where are you really from? And then I'm like, oh yeah, I'm from India. And then it's like, okay, so what part of India, where have you lived? Yeah, and no, they got the answer that they want, but then, and then I have to like go on to say that, hey, I've never lived in India. And they're like, wait, what? And then and then people start assuming whatever the hell they want, right? So it gets to the point in which it's just people seeing what they want to see, assuming what they want to assume, and then taking that and running with it.
Now, dude, and it's absurd how many kind of value judgments come out of it, right? Like, I mean, the question, where do you come from, for you and I and many others like us, is stressful enough as it is.
Yeah.
It's one of those where you just kind of want to get out of it, like with as few scratches as possible, without with as little kind of time investment as required. But yeah, I mean, that's so true, right? Like people, like based on what the final answer to that question is, right? I mean, you like whoever answer, you are asking that question.
You said that, like the final answer to that question.
Yeah, the final answer to that question, wherever you arrive with that question. Like people will form so many snap judgments about you, right?
And so you play along with it. And you play along with it. You take that on. You take that as your stride. You start being like that person that talks like I had two lines prepared about, you know, India or Dubai for anybody that wanted to, you know, engage in that conversation, because I knew invariably at some point that is going to happen. But weird enough though, Rohit, if like going back to your experience with like other Indian origin or diaspora people or other Indians, you know, there was a sizable contingent of grad students from India there as well. And they initially took a liking towards me because they were like, okay, we have one other, right? And Missouri, it's like so very few like people that are Indians to start with that, you know, I was immediately brought into this like grad group circle, and they were really kind and super nice to me. But I could tell that there was that slight tension of like, but he's really not from India. Which is another tension altogether, because suddenly you're like, wait, so if I am not, if I can't blend in with the larger group and I can't blend in with the smaller group, where do I fit in? And that feels really lonely, especially during a time like that, when you're in that big phase of your life, where you're in your college and like early young adult. What are your experiences with that?
And this is what we were talking about, right? I mean, like, finding identity and finding that sense of self is, I feel like, just maybe not a lifelong thing, but definitely close to it. And I feel like that college is, I think, the start of that, where you have enough maturity to view your life and your kind of background in broader terms, but also kind of you're starting to work through it for the first time in a meaningful way, right?
I
resonate with you completely. Because like on one level, like, you're right, like, you know, there are, like, you know, I mean, I have some great friends who are Indian Americans, or ABCDs, as you might say.
I know, wait, what is ABCD for the audience?
American born confused ACs. And we can get into the confused part of it later as well.
We've been working with quite a few acronyms here, like TCK,
Kid,
FOB, Fresh Off the Boat, ABCD.
So I would, you know, like, to a lot of these folks, like, you know, it's a very unique experience, you know, as ours have been. And even ours are unique in different ways, like we've talked about already, right? But the experience, again, of being an immigrant of any kind of origin, especially an Indian origin, especially in the U.S., is very different, right? It's very different in the U.K., it's very different in Canada, but we're talking about the U.S. right now, since we both went to college there. And even then, the experience, somebody in Jersey and somebody in California and somebody in Texas and somebody in Ohio may also be very different within that, right?
Very different.
Because in some places you have Indian communities that cluster together. In some cases, you have, you know, really kind of scattered Indian immigrants who are trying to assimilate to their own kind of communities, whether it's white majority or POC majority or whatever it is, right? So their lived experiences are very different, and our lived experiences are lived experiences of anybody who hasn't gone through the same things that they have.
Yeah,
you know, going to like similar schools, like, you know, having your after school garba and all that kind of shit.
Right.
Like, you are alien to them. And I don't begrudge them that, because, I mean, it's a very different set of lived experiences, right? Similarly, you know, I had many classmates in college who were from India, born and brought up in Delhi, Bombay, Bangalore, or, you know, other parts of the country as well.
Right.
They saw me as foreign. And this goes back to the poem you shared early on, right? Like, you know, you're kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you are not like, you do not have that kind of, they basically can't pin you down, right? And I feel like in a lot of societies, labels and kind of having those anchor points to form a judgment about somebody are so important. In India, or at least in Delhi, it's like, you know, where did you go to school? Where did you go to college?
Yeah.
You know, what does your family do? Like, where do you live? Right. Like what kind of area do you live in, right? And based on all of these things, people form value judgments, and they triangulate who you are and how to kind of interact with you. And when you don't have those data points, and apologies for talking like a consultant, I'm told I do that a lot, then people don't know how to deal with you, and they'd rather just not deal with you, right, in many cases. So you're kind of like caught between a rock and a hard place, where you're straddling these two different sides of the fence, but not really able to commit to each one, partially because you don't feel at home on either one side. You don't feel fully settled, fully kind of able to relate to either one, but also because that acceptance isn't really fully there from the other side, if you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And I think I became a lot more acutely aware of this when I moved back to India after graduation in 2016, you know, I started working at a company which was mostly kind of, you know, engineers and MBAs, actually 99.9% engineer MBAs who had kind of, you know, grown up and been educated in this country.
Right.
And the assumption was that because I didn't come from that same background, right? Because I, you know, had a different set of lived experience or whatever it was, that I was somehow not going to be as good at my job. I didn't really have that credibility professionally. Socially, definitely not, forget that. So it was kind of a wake-up call for me. In terms of, like, you know, you moved home, but you're not really home. And kind of grappling with that, I think, has been one of the hardest things I've had to do, because on one level, moving back to India has been the easiest move of the four that I've had to make in my life.
Tell me about it.
But on the other hand, it's required just rationalizing this fact that I can feel at home, but I'll never really fit in. And that's fine. Like, I think I'm being my peace with it now. Like, I know where to kind of pull back from conversations or involve myself more deeply. I know, like, where I, you know, where I have somebody to contribute versus I don't. And I, you know, I pick and choose my moments and the people I share those with, right, accordingly.
And that's interesting, Rohit, because for me, right, like, I guess your experience of, like, coming to peace with who you are maybe happened a little earlier, especially in your high school days, as you mentioned. For me, it happened once I moved to China, right? So I finished my graduation and then I started the Schwarzman Scholars Program. And it took me to be surrounded by other individuals that were outside their comfort zone and experiencing what I had gone through my entire life for me to actually come to terms with celebrating my identity. And let me explain that. What I mean by that is my program had about 100 people, all of us living in Beijing. You had about 40-odd Americans, about 30-odd, you know, people from quote-unquote rest of the world, and the remaining Chinese scholars, right? And so you had this environment in which all of us were living together in this little bubble, but the bubble was in this, like, wider, you know, unfamiliar territory for all of us. So much so that you start seeing, like, what people value and what they brought to the table constantly, right? So what I started noticing was that some of these American students, they brought to the table, or, like, brought to the forefront, like, aspects of being American that were just, like, core to their being, right? Like, they were like, yeah, I'm American, this is important to me. Some friends from you know, different parts of Africa that brought that aspect of their lived experience with them. And then there were other TCKs like myself, and Chinese scholars who brought their identity, and, like, TCKs like myself that brought ours to the table. And suddenly it was okay to be whatever you are without definition. Like, it was celebrated almost, right? Like, it was Anurag, Dubai, and India and US. Great. You know, all your experiences are, we're not going to judge your accent because we know it's an amalgamation. You know, things as little as that to, like, your lived experiences validated. Like, that's all I needed to hear. Like, my friend Surya, who I've had on this episode, he'd spent his life growing up in Nepal and then moved to Venezuela, where he spent a considerable amount of time, and then to US and then China, right? And so we had all these different characters from all these different places where suddenly, because of this unfamiliar bubble that we were in, none of us were in our comfort zone. So everything was accepted. And then I started exploring, like, okay, my passport is Indian. All my life I've struggled with visas for travel, to live places, needing residence permits, and so on and so forth. But if I had to move somewhere, I'm tired of all this constant moving. Like, if I had to move somewhere, what is the most convenient place to move to? I'm like, my passport says I'm Indian. I've never lived in India, but fuck it. Let's move to India, right? Like, as you said, in many ways, it was the easiest decision I had to make, but also the hardest in the fact that I never lived here. And for you, you never lived here since you were 8. So it was just like, I was still moving to a different country and a new experience. But again, didn't know that, like, a place where I would blend in, at least physically, that it would be so difficult to actually blend in.
So tell me one thing. So I've never asked you this, but so given the fact that, fine, like, you were kind of returning to your roots and all that kind of stuff, it was still kind of a bit of a shock, right? Because, you know, you're the an Indian community in an expat bubble is very different than living in India, right?
Or,
you know, so of course, you know, you had your foundation when you set up your foundation when you moved back. Right. How was that? Did you find it affected that experience or kind of like set you back or set you forward? Or tell me about that.
Yeah, it's a very good question, man, because in many ways, while it did, the setting back was on a personal front, right? Like where it just became hard to relate with a lot with people that had spent like a lot of time here. And suddenly, because I was doing my own thing, I found myself like constantly interacting with a lot of people that were from India and had experiences over here and could easily tell that I was not from here, right? Like everything, my Hindi is still messed up. You know, for fuck's sake, I'm a Malayali who's grown up all around the world. And so it's not like my Hindi is that good or like, it's like I'm very conversational, but you can tell that I have an accent. And so it's easy to pick up that I'm not from here. One is that, but the thing that I found myself doing is because in the initial days were so difficult, I started searching out and looking for other Dubai transplants like myself, because I knew that theoretically a lot of people from Dubai move back to India after like schooling to study or work and whatnot. So I was like, okay, so it's all about identifying who these friends or like previous connections are that have moved here now. And like, I can make my own comfort zone out of it. And that's exactly what I did. So my initial phase here, I would say most of my friends were entirely like people that were my close friends or friends in Dubai that I became very close with after moving here because we all found each other. One of my co-founders of my foundation was somebody that had transplanted just similarly like I did. And some of my close friends who like allowed me to like assimilate easier to India were all these people that were like, hey, we've spent a couple more years than you here assimilating and we've gone through this trouble. So let's take you along for the ride and also introduce you to others now that are from here so that your transition to making those kind of friends are much easier. And I'm so thankful for them, Rohit, because if it weren't for them, like I would have been, you know, forever stuck in my like little, you know, bubble of like not being able to like make those friends because they understood the struggle that I was going through because they had gone through it themselves. And so they were like, you know what, let's cut down a little bit of the struggle. Let's have you meet other people. And so I'm so thankful for them because that allowed me to like truly feel at ease. And it took a while. It took almost a year for me to like feel comfortable living here because even that's a culture shock living here. What about you, man? Because you found yourself in an environment suddenly because you moved straight to work, right? Like, so you went from college graduating at NYU in this multicultural environment there in New York City to then moving to Delhi where you're working at a firm in which it's a very homogenous population around you. What are some of your like stories of like assimilating or not from that experience?
So I think the big thing, which you pointed out, every time you make a new transition, it's very important to have those people who can, if not shepherd you through it, then at least be there to make it with you. And really pull you up when it gets to be a lot, because it can get to be a lot. When I moved to boarding school, like I told you, really down in the dumps, self-esteem had cratered, at least when it came to where I came from and who I was and where I belonged. And like you had when you were in China, I was lucky enough to kind of fall into a group of friends who did just that for me, and these guys are my friends, like brothers to this day, because I mean, like, that's what it is, right? I mean, it transcends any kind of cultural identity. It transcends, you know, all those kind of I wouldn't say superficial, but those kind of more common points of commonality or shared experience, whatever it is. And those guys, yeah, I mean, they pulled me up and they And they were like, yeah, dude, like, we're here to walk this path with you. We right. are also like two or so you are one of one at this school in terms of where you're from. We are two of two or three of three. Mm-hmm. Right. So we basically had our gang of merry misfits who pulled each other up and then ended up, you know, being very involved, ended up being leaders of the school.
Right.
In college, it took me a while to find those people. Mm-hmm. Because I immediately expected that I would find those people.
Right.
Right. And I didn't. And that hit me for a six, right? Because I had attached so much value and so much importance to that, that I, without it, I was lost and insecure and depressed. A lot of the same feelings that I had in Hong Kong, I think they started seeping back in.
Right.
Which wasn't great, right? Luckily, I think what I did have going for me, what I still have going for me, and I think that's probably been the saving grace, or was the saving grace in the first 3 years I was back in India. When, like you say, I was working in a fairly homogenous population, which didn't really find that, really wasn't ready to engage with me on that level, despite my ability to, my willingness to kind of engage and assimilate and kind of, you know, put my own shit to one side. Mm. I think was just family. And not even my extended family, because a lot of times I feel like my extended family also treats me as foreign. Or treats me as, you know, not really, really belonging, even though I grew up with a lot of them.
Right.
But like my parents, man, like, I mean, you need that anchor point where you can kind of like hitch your wagon and be like, okay, like whatever happens, I still have, you know, this that I can rely on. That can be your parents. It can be somebody from your extended family. It can be, like you say, you know, you move back and you found your people from Dubai or in China, your sportsman cohort. Yeah. This has to be somebody, because it's very, very hard to go through it alone.
100%.
But I think the benefit, kind of moving away from the super negative conversation, is that, or negative, but kind of,
we're talking about difficult stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a tough thing. But I think the flip side is that, you find that your first degree network, and more so your second, third degree network, is big enough to kind of cover the entire world. So even if you don't know somebody who lives somewhere, you know someone who knows somebody.
Yeah.
And that somebody who knows somebody can always put you in touch with somebody who can be that person for you.
Yeah.
Or ideally a few people who can be that person for you, because you get over that kind of first difficult conversation about, like, you know, where are you really from?
Yeah.
And you're automatically a known quantity because you're coming through somebody else's reference, right?
Yeah.
Somebody vouches for you.
Yeah.
Somebody kind of sticks their neck out and says, like, you know, I know Rohit, I know Anurag, you know, they're cool. Bit weird, but you know, cool.
No, Rohit, absolutely, man. And I think, I think this is a good transition to move into, like, talking about the privileges that come, privileges, the inherent privileges of having such a kind of upbringing and lived experience, but also what it teaches us and the skills that we pick up along the way, right?
Yeah.
And I hate to be, again, sounding like a consultant like you did a while ago, but these are skills that you pick up. I feel like you and I, out of necessity, have learned how to talk to anybody, you know, in terms of like going and starting a conversation or guiding conversations in certain ways, or feeling comfortable in a space of otherness, that we can embrace that kind of uncertainty and like feeling of like, you know, like distancing and all of that in positive ways. And
honestly, I don't see it as a feeling of otherness anymore. Like, I think in those settings, I see myself as, I mean, to say I feel like a bridge is a bit self-important and a bit shitty, but whatever the less shitty version of that is I feel like maybe not a role that I'm willing to play in every conversation, but it's something that I feel equipped and able to play if necessary. If, you know, you have two groups of people who obviously, you know, cannot connect, right? So, as an example, I was working, my previous job, I was working with a firm as a client. I was kind of embedded there. Right. And they had a really big contingent of kind of folks coming from abroad, so expats, including people who kind of like Indians who'd spent a long time in the US, as well as kind of people from other kind of nationalities, demographic groups, ethnic groups, what have you, right?
Yeah.
And they also had a pretty big contingent of Indians, like from India.
Right.
Right. And I was embedded there with like, you know, a couple of consultants from other consulting firms.
Yeah.
Who just had a very hard time relating to half the organization and getting anything done with them, right? Because they just didn't have that ability to kind of engage and talk and kind of shoot the shit and kind of get to know people. But the point that those people would then be willing to kind of, you know, help them along or stick up for them or, you know, whatever it was when push came to shove.
Right.
I didn't have that problem, right? To the point that I was actually more comfortable, more at home, and more kind of settled working in the client's office than I often was going back to my home office.
Yeah.
Because I felt like I was able to play that role and be that fence sitter in a comfortable way.
Yeah.
And somebody who was able to kind of absorb and experience and kind of engage in the best of both worlds and be adaptable.
Right. And Rohit, I don't think tooting your own horn or being, you know, facetious when you say that, you know, what it teaches us to be is a good bridge, because it is. I don't think it's about self-importance there, right? Like some people are really great at giving a great account of where they're from and sticking up for their place and, you know, their values and all of that. And some people like us are just good at blending in and as such making everyone around us comfortable to the fact that even though you're in a foreign environment, you're not really in a foreign environment. We can make that transition a little easier for others as well as ourselves.
For sure. For sure.
And almost so that, you know, what my experience has taught me is to open up to a lot of people that I think otherwise, if I had grown up in just one community and never left, that I otherwise wouldn't have, right? Because now I have a sense that I don't take anyone's stereotype or look or public persona. Yeah, and you can't because you were there experiencing the kind of pain that's caused by that pigeonholing. And so the last thing I do is like have that kind of sense of like, oh, you're from there, so you must be XYZ, or I'm from here, so I'm ABC. Instead, it's just like, hey, you are a human. And so your experiences are valid and my experiences are valid. And now let's just see where the bridge lies between us. And like, let's tap into that.
And it's normally that I would push you a little bit further on that. Right. Because I feel like blending in definitely, I feel like, you know, you get that kind of adaptability and that resilience and that kind of versatility. You get all of that. But I feel like what you also get is perspective.
Yeah.
Right. And that perspective gives you the ability to advocate and take viewpoints and kind of stand up on things that, you know, many people or some people may not do. I'll give you an example. Right. Mm. So I talked about my motley crew of friends from boarding school. Right?
Right.
So, you know, we were for all intents and purposes a bit of a, we come from all over the place. Right. Like a couple of guys from Nigeria. There's a guy from Egypt by way of Saudi and Canada, like an Armenian guy from Maryland, right?
Like all over the
fucking map, right? And each one of these guys over time became more than a friend to me, right? Like became like family in a lot of ways, right?
Yeah. I mean,
you know, as cliche as it is, right? Like, you're at a boarding school, you're kind of living, breathing each other, like pretty much the entire time, right?
Yeah.
It's close as you get, right? And that's a pretty, pretty kind of formation, like a formational time in your lives.
Hmm.
And what that teaches you is that our differences really aren't as big as we make them out to be.
I mean, I guess our values have been informed due to all these different places and, you know, regions that we've been accustomed to and live. And that is a privilege in and of itself, right? Like,
that's what I'm saying.
Seeing all these options and like taking out the select learnings, the best learnings from each of these and making that core to our being is definitely a privilege, but also a hard fought privilege, right? Because it's
I mean, yeah, it's not easy, right? It's not easy. And, but at the same time, while it's, let's put it this way. Let me try this again. Right.
Yeah,
it's not easy when it's happening, but at the same time, it's not all bad because it's an unparalleled life in terms of just the exposure you get, the people you meet, you know, the convenience and the life you're able to lead. Right. Mm. But at the same time, if you kind of stretch that experience out into the longer term, right? On one side, you do grapple with all these identity crises and these dilemmas and, you know, the kind of stress of being asked where you're really from and all that kind of shit. But at the same time, you have this perspective, this worldview, this network, you know, and it's this understanding. It's beautiful, honestly. And
it's invaluable.
And that's when that person asked me, like, would you do it any other way? Would you let your kids kind of grow up in one place and like have their school that they grew up in and their high school that they went through and their kind of like chud buds that they kind of had the entire way?
Yeah.
I was like, you know, if it was left up to me, probably not.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it, especially the way we're globalizing as a world, right? Mm. And, you know, jury's out on whether that continues after the complete asshats who are in power around the world.
Happening
right now,
around the world, yeah.
Plus COVID on top of that.
Yeah.
You know, if that opportunities arise in the future, right? Hell yeah, like I want my kids to go through it.
Right.
Because you get a very different, very enriching experience out of it. Mm. But at the same time, you go through a lot of experiences early on that, number one, build resilience.
Yeah.
And number two, build an appreciation of who you are and where you come from, right, and who other people are and where they come from.
Yeah.
And more importantly, how, where people come from does not shape their value or their worth or what they bring to the table as individuals.
Exactly.
It's just one of many things that shape that.
You know what, right? It comes down to ultimately, Rohit, it's a genuine and pure respect for people.
Yeah,
it's a difficult and roundabout journey to get there, but we get there thanks to this kind of like upbringing, much easier and much in a much quicker way than you would otherwise, I feel. And so that's something that, you know, I'm very thankful for sure. Yeah, and I don't think I could have put it any other in a better way, man. Like the way you just rounded it up so well, that this journey, as difficult as it's been, will I do it again? 100 times over. And sometimes some lessons you just have to learn the hard way. But once it's learned, it becomes a beautiful thing. The world just opens up to you and the world truly becomes your home. Don't ask me where I'm really from, because I'm from so many different places and I want to celebrate each of those identities and each of those places and all those people that became family in all of these places, because that's who I really am.
Hey man, and this comes back to what I said at the start, right? I mean, you eventually reach this realization that home isn't a place, right? It's more than a place. It may be a place, right? It may be like Dubai, where you've had so many experiences, for example, right? Having spent a lot of time there growing up. But more importantly, it's just where your people are at, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that that is an important thing to have your people.
Yeah.
You know, whether or not they look the same, talk the same, act the same, live in the same places as you, in my mind, is immaterial. As long as they're there and you know they're there, right? And today, like we were talking about this before we started recording, like today, like we're so interconnected that it really is just a stone's throw, right? Like, you know, you have your WhatsApp groups, you have like, you know, this, that, you have various social media.
Yeah,
man, it's a fun one.
But on that note, brother, thank you so much for, you know, wearing your heart on your sleeve. going on this journey with me, because as I said, this is not a podcast that I'm doing for the views or the listens. This is something that sits deeply within my core, and I'm glad that I found the right person to go on that journey with. I know, as you rightfully mentioned, right, like, as our journey of improvement and learning doesn't end here, I don't think the conversation, you know, has, like, we've even scratched the surface, but I think it's something that we can carry on forward, since, you know, we've had such a beautiful platform to express it. So anyone out there, if you're a third culture or not, or if you want to learn more about, you know, what it takes, please do reach out to us. We love talking about this. But hopefully you come in with an open mind and an open heart, because we're still figuring out what it means to be this. And so we don't have all the right answers, but we'll try to let you know what our experiences are. Rohit, my man, thank you for joining Millennial Musings. What a pleasure to have you on board, brother.